Well, I think, as the hostess, I think I really need to start. Thank you, Jenny, for being backstop. So, a very, very warm welcome to everybody in the room and to those of you listening at a later date. Tonight we have the great pleasure of, well, I have the great pleasure of interviewing Shanta Siddhi. So Shanta Siddhi is a very much loved member of our Sangha, an elder of our Sangha.
And that's enough, Sarah.
And I've invited her to choose 8 music tracks, which has been excruciating, apparently. 1 book and a luxury item that she would choose if she were to be cast away on a desert island. And I will, at the end of the evening, be casting her away. So Shanta Siddhi is very precious. She's got a very loyal following of women in our Sangha who love her very much. She was ordained in 1998 by Anjali. And is it 4 women that you've ordained in Sheffield?
4 in Sheffield, 1 in Leeds, 2 in Lancaster.
There we go. So
and then I was retired.
7 women altogether?
7 altogether.
And she's KM...
And you're number 3.
Am I? Okay.
Yes, you're number 3.
3. Number 3. And you're KM to many more, I suspect.
Quite a few, yes. Young Sarah, for instance.
She's a very, very good friend, and to many of us. And I think that's because she's an amazingly patient listener. She doesn't judge. She just listens with kindness and compassion. And she's great in a crisis.
Your crises.
My crises, usually.
I don't have them, you see them. Gone beyond.
She's also got a great deal of energy. And although I think recently she's allowing herself to shed some of her duties and responsibilities, she remains very busy, travelling to see family and daughters and granddaughters, and going to order weekends, and meeting up with friends regularly. I just have this vision of Shanta Siddhi with her little bag. She always travels. I mean, when we went on my ordination retreat, my bag was about this big and her bag was about this big. And so I always imagine her at the train station with her very little modest bag, kind of going off on some adventure somewhere.
Mm.
I think that's a kind of...
Yeah. Unless I'm driving a truck, well, I might take a bit more.
Okay. One of my best and happiest memories of last year, actually, was your 80th birthday, which was organised by Janet and Sarah. And it was just such a glorious day, wasn't it? It was just... We were really... It felt like the gods were kind of out and just... very happy. And the weather was one of those gorgeous May days that just is really warm and blue-skied, and Chatsworth was very green and lovely, and it was just a very happy occasion. So so that's my introduction to Shanta Siddhi, and I'm really, really pleased to be able to interview you. Let's crack on, shall we? So, Shantacity, you were born in 1943.
During the World War?
Yeah.
That's why my teeth are terrible.
The youngest of four children, and you grew up on the outskirts of Liverpool?
I was born in Scarborough.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I could play for Yorkshire.
Yeah. Okay.
But when the war ended, we moved over to Liverpool.
Okay. Yeah. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your childhood?
Yes. I was the baby, and which is a quite privileged position to be in. And it was a very musical household, actually. My mum had been a professional pianist, and my dad sang in the church choir and stuff like that. So there was a lot of music about. And when Pranyashri said, choose a disc for that kind of time, I went, oh no, because what we used to do as soon as I could hold a tune was we would sing Gilbert and Sullivan four-part harmony. And I thought, the idea of listening to that on a desert island, I thought, no. I don't like it. Sorry for people who are admirers, but I really don't like it anymore. So that was the first of my difficulties, really, because that would immediately evoke home in one way, but I just don't like it. So, so I found it really difficult to choose tracks, partly because of my attitude to music has changed quite a lot. It was completely my life, really, for a long time. And then when I met the FWBO, I kind of forgot it. I was so busy doing stuff and going on retreats and listening to talks and all the rest of it that kind of I'd stopped listening to music, which is shocking. I didn't quite realize the extent to which that change had occurred. So that's been quite difficult to choose tracks throughout my life. And I've got a lot of life to get through as well, you know. So yes, my life. I've forgotten where I'm going with this.
Well, you were just telling me when we spoke earlier about, you mentioned the Gilbert and Sullivan, about your mum's playing the piano and her taste in music.
That's my first track. Yeah. Are we ready for a first track?
I think we're ready for a first track, aren't we? Let's play the first track. Over to Pranyashri Dayal.
Thank you.
much. Thank you. So that was Nocturne in E minor, Opus 72, number 1, by Chopin. I think you said you liked that because you could play it.
Yes, if you miss out some of the twiddly bits, it doesn't go too fast, so I can play it. And but it does, it very much conjures up my mother. And in fact, I chose it for her funeral. It's just very, yeah, very heartfelt somehow. I don't often listen to piano music because I prefer other instruments, but that I really love. Yeah, so I thought it was a good start.
Mm. Yeah. It is a good start. Mm. So we're going to change the...
Going to change gear a bit, so hold on to your hats.
So this is you being a teenager, isn't it?
Yes, this is me. I went to a Darrick Grant girls' school, and I worked very hard, and I was very serious. And, of course, I only listened to classical music. And
then the 50s happened.
And the 50s happened. Let's go straight into the next one, Rani Hridaya.
2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes 2, 3, and 4.
Started to change.
They did. Well, it really was a revolution, wasn't it? That heralded the revolution, the pop music revolution, rock and roll.
I can't think what we listened to before that. I mean, unserious people.
So that was Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and his Comets. So
after that, various people, because I live near Liverpool, various people came to have concerts in Liverpool, and I went with my friends, and I really tried hard to be a raver and really excited. My heart wasn't in it, really. I'm trying to think who there was. There was Cliff Richard. He's still alive. Cliff Richard, Anthony Newley. I can't remember. Anyway, you get the picture. It was me trying to be a teenager.
So,
So moving swiftly on.
Moving on. So rock and roll was kind of, it was there in the background, but it wasn't really where your heart was. Mm. I get the impression.
I was trying.
You were trying hard to be cool. Mm. Or something.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you were learning to play the cello.
Meanwhile, yes, I started the cello. Because there was a school orchestra that needed a cello, so I was approached as a likely candidate. And as happens in these places. And I really loved the cello. There's something about the depth of the sound that it makes, even if you can't play it very well. Actually, it's much kinder to learn than, say, the violin or something high, because it's... You make a mess, but it still sounds reasonably good. And it fitted in better with who I was and who the family were and everybody else. So I would be about 15, 16 when I took up the cello. And I've still got it, but I don't play it anymore, really.
I think Sarah took you to have it renovated recently, didn't you?
Yeah.
I seem to remember.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's no point in having an instrument that is not playable. But,
So this conjures up that period, this next track?
It conjures up that period, and it conjures up falling in line with something that really meant something to me, I suppose. Yeah.
Mm.
But it wasn't anything I talked about. I just... did it.
Mm.
So let's listen to it anyway.
Okay.
So this is what I would have loved at the time. I still do, but I'd, you know, if I were choosing from my ego, I'd choose something more complicated and all the rest of it. But this is.
Yeah. So let's.
You will recognise this.
Let's hear it, and I'll. Yeah.
Thank you. was The Swan by Saint-Saëns, performed by Yo-Yo Ma, that particular version. So you I remember you saying you took your cello to university.
I did, yeah. And I took my mournful self with me to university as well. Yeah, it's really odd, isn't it? Because I had a happy family life, you know, as much as happy families are. And things went reasonably well for me. I was reasonably healthy. But I got this real, you know, that kind of music just sums it up for me. I was just a bit mournful. And off I went to university and had a not an easy time. I wasn't good at being a teenager, really, despite my best efforts, and I wasn't much good at being a young student, really. In London, where it was all happening, and, you know, because I went to University College, which is next to the Slade, you know, it was all there. And I was doing languages, so I had to go to the pictures several times a week to listen to foreign language films. It's obviously part of the course. But I wasn't a happy bunny, really.
Mm.
So.
Mm. Yeah. And I think you said that you had a year in France as well, which
had a year in France. Yeah,
was a bit tricky.
I just found it. I was lonely. I mean, I did enjoy it. I thought of several things I could play you from that time, but I haven't chosen one in the end.
So, should we move on to the next track?
Yes, this is the, this sums up being a European, actually.
Okay.
I think. And being a bit lost and wanting something but not sure what I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Well, I just got one sentence to say before.
Sorry.
She said to me, I went out with lots of men at university.
You're saying that in front of my daughter.
But I didn't particularly fall for any of them. Anyway, I think this kind of...
I just really like her whole attitude.
Yeah.
And if their wings burn, what am I to do? I can't help it.
Thank you. So that was Falling in Love Again by Marlene Dietrich.
I was just thinking it took me 30 years before I got one of these.
Your gold caser.
Yeah. I'm not doing that anymore.
So the other thing that you said was, when I interviewed you earlier, was you were longing for something, but you weren't sure what it was.
Yeah.
So I guess that comes a bit later.
That comes a bit later. Let's get onto the Dharma as fast as we can. Get out of this, because I wasn't good at being a teenager. I wasn't much cop at being in my 20s, swinging 60s and all that. So,
so quite a lot of life happens in this next period. You meet your future husband.
I met Nick. Yeah,
you met Nick. Yeah.
He was just back from his travels, and he was working in London as a community worker. And he really liked music too, but he tended to work all the time. So my job was to take him off to concerts and the theatre and, you know, general social secretary. So we had a good time, and wasn't long before we got together and had two daughters and moved around a fair bit, moved to Birmingham after his work and ended up in North, I mean I'm covering years and years and years basically, ended up in North Lancashire and created a good life together actually. We ended up both working at the university and just playing a lot of music. So we both played in a semi-professional orchestra, of which is coming up in a minute.
Yeah.
I played in a women's string quartet. I played in a street band with him. We went to demos and played all kinds of, you know, Mkosisika Lele and We Shall Overcome, and goodness knows what we played. And I also played in the Bolton Les Sands Village Band with six old fellas who worried about their teeth, because if you play a brass instrument and your teeth go, you're stuck. So, yeah, they were lovely. I really enjoyed that. And that was the main things I played in, yeah. So life was good, actually. It was very full. I enjoyed being a mum. I enjoyed living where we lived, which was just on the edge of the Lake District. So lots of good countryside. And I enjoyed my work. I was working as a student counsellor at the university. And, yeah.
Happy times.
Happy times. Contented times. Busy times. Ridiculously busy times.
I'm astonished at how much you've managed to fit in while being...
Oh, I haven't started yet.
A working mother and two girls and all this music.
Yeah, because we didn't have family locally, so every time you go out, you have to get a babysitter, which is fine, but then you have to pay it back. So didn't spend many evenings in, actually, because I was the main one to go out and repay the babysitter, you see what I mean, by doing babysitting. Yeah, so busy.
And you played, you're in a band called Andropov's Puppets?
Yes, that was the street band, yes. You remember Andropov? If you played in a political anything, you were called a puppet of the Russians. Obviously, you're a commie spies and all the rest of it, and Andropov at the time. So we were Andropov's puppets.
And you played...
I didn't play the cello in the street. That would not have worked very well. Now, I took up the saxophone, the tenor sax, which is good and loud and not very subtle, played by me anyway. And also, I found it really helped, because I'd go to demonstrations where there'd be a lot of anger about, and the But if you're looking after a saxophone, that's what you're doing. You're not going to hit a policeman with it. You know, you kind of really look after it and play music, and the music lifts people anyway. And it was the best I could do, really. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're quite, yeah, you were playing at rallies for C&D and going to Greenham Common. And
Clause 28 demos.
Okay,
yeah. Remote Clause 28? Gosh, that takes me back.
Yeah.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
I love it. I don't do it anymore. It's wonderful. I have weekends off. Because it used to be just very busy. Yeah. Mm.
So this next track is a piece that you played with
the Hafner Orchestra.
Hafner Orchestra in Lancaster. And it reminds you of that time.
Yes, it's not my favourite piece of music, but it takes me back to that time, and it also takes me back to... I just love playing with other people, actually. And particularly this, I mean, it sounds crazy, but we were terrible. We couldn't play this. We weren't bad with things that were a bit slower and quieter, but this was pandemonium, basically.
It's a rambunctious piece.
Rambunctious.
Yes, let's hear it.
Not all of it, please.
But it's a bit long, so we'll fade.
just goes on and on.
It's really grown on me, actually. That thing.
Yeah. It's got its.
That was Le Bœuf sur le Toit, the Cow on the Roof, by Darius Milhaud.
Milhaud? Yeah, that'll do.
And performed by Leonard Bernstein and his orchestra. So, yeah. Happy times playing in the Hafner Orchestra.
Happy times, yes. Except we had to wear black. Just remember that. I had my concert dress. Yeah.
So, around this time, you were working at Lancaster University.
Yep.
And you came across
FWB. Yeah. Oh. So, yeah, I was enjoying life. And there was something I was looking for still. Hadn't found it. And, well, me and Nick were kind of exploring to see whether we could find any Buddhist groups because we were interested. And above where I worked in the university, there was the religious studies department, who were useful to tell you where there might be places. And there was an FWBO group in Oswald Twistle, which is just down the road from... Don't laugh. People live in Oswald Twistle still. Yes, there was a group there, and we went there. But actually, at the same time, I was doing a lunchtime workshop in the Chaplaincy Centre at the university and found a blue and pink leaflet for Tara Loka. And I thought, I like the colours of the leaflet, so I thought I'd give it a try. And that was it, really. I went to Tara Loka for the weekend, and I thought, okay, right. It was important to me because, well, the Dharma just made sense straight away. In those days, I must just tell you, in those days, you went on an introductory weekend, you didn't know a thing about anything, and you learnt the metta bhavana, the mindfulness of breathing, puja. You had a talk on the Dharma and on the Buddha and on the Sangha, all in a weekend.
Wow.
And we also, we had a newspaper, we had a journalist there who kept on popping up and asking inappropriate questions because she was writing an article. But anyway, I forgave her because it was such a good weekend. And it was a woman's project. So I liked doing things with Nick, but he'd got, there were men's things, he would go off to Padmaloka and I could go to Tara Loka. And we came together and we got things going in Lancaster because there was nothing in Lancaster. Mm. Well, when I say nothing, there was a Tibetan group and two Zen groups and a Nichiren group, probably a Theravadan somewhere as well. So there were lots of things which we'd mostly had a look at, but FWBO was the one for me, really.
Yeah, that fitted much better.
Just made sense to me.
Yeah. And I think you went to Tara Loka for the first time in 1988.
I did.
May 1988. It opened in 1986, I think.
Sorry? It opened in 86, yes. Yeah. So it was still, in process, shall we say.
Yeah.
Which was exciting in itself, because you soon got requests to come and dig the pond or lay the shrine room floor or whatever. Yeah.
Great. So I think we struggled a little bit to find something to evoke that period, didn't you?
I even got a tape from a friend of mine. I'd lost mine, a tape that we made at the time because they were fundraising, surprise, surprise. And there was a tape of various people chanting and songs that were written and stuff, but I couldn't get it to play, so it's too bold. So you'll have to imagine that bit. But I chose something else which kind of evokes that time.
Mm. Let's hear this.
Thank you.
track is three deep singing monks with singing bowls and cymbals from an album by Tibetan monks, and that's the first track. The album's called Om Mani Padme Hum.
It's kind of interesting because it wasn't particularly the exoticism that I was interested in when I found the Dharma. I'd been reading books by, you know, people who went off to Japan and lived in monasteries and nearly died and all the rest of it. And I definitely got the impression that that's what you had to do. You couldn't be a Buddhist here. You had to go and suffer somewhere a very long way away. And that's why going to Toraloka had such a big effect, because finally the penny dropped. I could be a Buddhist here. And I didn't have to do really quite such strange things as make a noise like that. But I love those voices. Amazing. Amazing. So we could try, couldn't we?
We could try.
Yeah.
So you were really involved in, along with Nick, in setting stuff up in the local area, weren't you?
We were, yeah. Because there wasn't anything. But by going down to Oswaldtwistle, there was one Dharmachari in Oswaldtwistle. And he was excited that we were interested. So he came up once a month, bless him, and he said, if you can get some people together, I'll come and teach you. So he came for, I think he did a day first, and we just asked everybody we could think of who'd been at all interested in meditation or anything, and they all, you know, came along. And we ended up with a group of about 10, maybe. And Pramodana came and taught us basic stuff. And the rest of the time we kept it going ourselves. And so from this tiny little group, loads of order members have grown out of it, actually. Maitri Devi, who now is chair of Toraloka. She was one of ours.
Fantastic.
Yeah, loads of us. And so you see what happened to music. It got pushed out because I was doing Mitra study, which I had to go down to Manchester for Mitra study because who else was going to do it? And running a university class and our regulars and trying to get off to Toraloka whenever I could and stuff like that. So there wasn't any time for frivolous things like playing the cello and stuff like that. But again, it felt very focused and quite frustrating because after a while, well, I couldn't be a Mitra first because there weren't any, the nearest Dharmacharinis were Toraloka. There weren't any in Manchester, for instance.
Really?
It's heaving now.
That's crazy.
No Dharmacharinis in Manchester.
Yeah.
Or Glasgow. Punyamala was here, but that seemed a very, very long way away from North Lancs. So it was a bit frustrating. And
Nick became ordained fairly quickly.
He did, bless him. Yeah, because he had Pramodana, partly. Well, he went to Padmaloka and, shall we say, we're rather different. He's very fluent and I keep quiet. Anyway, he went to Padmaloka and they said, well, it won't be next spring. I mean, this was probably the summer vacation. That would be too soon, but could you pencil it in for the one after? Mm-hmm. And he came back and told me that and I thought... Well, that's nice, isn't it? Which, of course, it was, but it was hard because there weren't any Dharmacharinis. I just couldn't see how I'd get anywhere, really. So what happened was a difficult decision. I decided I'd just have to leave where I lived. And, well, Anna and her sister had both left home by then, so it wasn't that I felt I had to be there for them. But I liked living where I was. It was fine living with Nick. He could have been a bit tidier, but apart from that, he was fine. You know, we got on well together, doing stuff together and things. I loved the area. I loved my job. I was very fortunate to have that job. Various friends all around and stuff. But I didn't see how I could get anywhere. Mm. And, yeah. So anyway, long story short, I decided to move to Cambridge, which at that point they could give you a job, somewhere to live, and there were three Dharmacharinis there. Three. I don't know how many there are now, about 30, maybe more, probably more actually. Anyway, so that's what I did. I moved to Cambridge and worked for Windhorse Trading and lived in a community. No, I didn't live in a community straight away. Mm. I moved in with another Mitra who had this nice house in. So I was let in very gently, actually, to living in this very nice house in Newnham, which is a nice area of Cambridge. I mean, there are some areas of Cambridge that aren't, believe it or not. But yeah, so it was very, very pleasant. And they had a piano there. And she ran a bookshop, so she was my ideal landlady. Mm. And I worked in
Evolution.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
So big change, leaving family life, leaving your job, husband,
and
upping sticks to Cambridge.
Upping sticks to Cambridge.
Yep. All for the Dharma.
Well, it was kind of a decision that made itself, really. Mm. I mean, yeah. Obviously, it wasn't easy to do, but I just felt on track somehow that it was inevitable. Mm. Yeah. It was interesting going, what age would I be? I'd be 50s, early 50s. Mm. Yeah. So there'd be these young women from around the world who'd come to work in the shop, and they'd have these conversations about what a boring thing it was to do, and it wasn't, you know. Where was the Dharma in this, selling wind chimes, blah-de-blah? Mm-hmm. And they lived in communities, and they said, community life is so difficult. You have to live with these people. And I said, do you remember family life? Etc. I mean, I just felt, you know, I had no complaints on that score at all. I was just delighted. When I moved into community after the first year, I just lived opposite the Buddhist center, and I lived with these interesting women, two Dharmacharinis then. And I don't know, it was just...
So community life was a doddle compared to being a busy working mom.
Absolutely. I only had to cook once a week. And... yeah, I only had to do my own washing. I mean, what's not to like?
Absolutely. So, should we hear the next track? I think this reminds you of your time in Cambridge.
Yes, can't remember what it is, but I'm sure it does.
We'll find out.
Go for it.
Yeah, let's hear it. It's very beautiful.
Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. Lots of...
Thank you.
was Agnus Dei by from Bach's Mass in B minor. So that evokes time in Cambridge, free concerts. And
because I was busy working and all the rest of it, but there's lots and lots of free music in Cambridge, or there was. Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And was, I suppose, more of my roots into religion than the Dharma, so it came together very well. Expressed something for me, I suppose. Yeah. So it was from Cambridge that I got my invitation to ordination, and I went off to Tuscany, which was the first time women had gone there in 1998.
Yeah.
And there were four of us who went from Cambridge. I'm trying to think who there were now. Two from my community and two from the community along the road. That's right. So four of us went, yeah. And we went for 7 weeks in that time. Yeah, that's fantastic.
And you were telling me that a bit about Il Convento, where you were ordained, and about the opera props.
That's right. It was Il Convento. It had been a convent or a monastery or whatever, and it was falling down a bit. But this English guy had bought it, and he ran operas there every summer. And what he did was he chose kind of slightly out of the way operas that hadn't been performed, so he'd get people interested in them. And he'd bring over singers who were just launching their careers, so they were really pleased to get a job singing in this. You know, this was interesting. And so he didn't pay them. He just flew them out, I think, and that was it. Anyway, the good thing for us was that there was a huge props room which was full of all kinds of dressing up things. And so we just had great fun. And there were cloisters, so we used a lot of the props to decorate the cloisters in eccentric ways. It was very good. Yeah,
sounds great.
And you know, the odd serious thing was happening as well. But.
Ordinations. Mm. So that was 1998, and you carried on working at Windhorse until you were 60.
Yeah, I decided that 60 was a good time to stop, really.
Mm-hmm.
In between that time, 98 and 2003, I was Sheffield shop visitor.
Oh, yes.
So as soon as I got back from ordination, and the following week, I was driving up to Sheffield with Kate Roger, who was the was your shop visitor at that point, and he was longing to pass it on to me. So that was good. Yeah, because I had Sia Badar was a friend of mine, so I could stay with her and visit the shop and have a nice time in Sheffield, have more connection with Sheffield.
Mm. So that was where your first connections with Sheffield started.
Really,
to come.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But so after you left Windhorse, what did you do? What were you doing?
I'll tell you a secret about Tree Ratna. Don't tell anybody that you're free. So I left Windhorse and I thought, I left my books at the Cambridge Buddhist Centre. I said, you know, look after these for now. And I left bunches of winter clothes at various friends, and I just set off, trolled around, see what comes next. I went on a retreat with Vasantra in France, believe it or not. And anyway, I'd been doing this, fancy free, let's see what comes next. And then I got a message from Ratna Dharani saying, would I please come to Tee Ratna Loka, because they needed a secretary to the retreat team. It's funny, isn't it, these things? I thought, oh, drat, you know, I was really enjoying the freedom, and except freedom's funny stuff anyway too, isn't it? It's quite anxiety provoking. So all I'm pleased with about myself was I said, yes, of course I'll come, but not on January the 1st. I'll come on February the 1st. So I delayed for a whole month to establish my independence and went off to Tiruvannamalai, which was, how long it had been going? It started in 96, something like that. So it hadn't been going that long. And there was a full support team. There were four of us who lived in a house down in the next village. And so I got myself there. And that first night, they said, oh, by the way, this house is going on the market tomorrow. I just unpacked my suitcase. Anyway, so yes, we all moved into Tiruvannamalai and tried to all fit in there. Yeah, good couple of years there. I enjoyed it. Mm. Yeah, good place to live. Mm.
And also you started supporting ordination retreats, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, so part of my job ended up trying to get a team together to, and a driver to get the stuff out to Italy and organise retreats in other parts of the country. And so I was primed, really. I knew what needed to happen. I can't remember what the first one was that... Yeah, there's just a whole string of retreats. So I was on Suryamati and Mokshalila's retreat in Scotland. I was the cook. There were 52 people on that retreat. That was quite a lot of food. Mm. It was great. I really enjoyed that. But I discovered also that there aren't that many people who are happy to drive a 4x4, you know,
a big truck,
to Europe. And I couldn't see what the difficulty was, really. You could take your time. I mean, we took about 3 days to get to Il Convento. So you'd pile up the truck with mats and cushions and shrine stuff. I'm ashamed to say we took quite a lot of food as well. I mean, we didn't take spaghetti, but we took, you know, we took soy milk and stuff like that that you couldn't get very easily there. And drove off to Italy, which is great fun. And then I'd either cook there or do whatever. Mm. We're a funny lot, aren't we? I don't particularly like cooking, but no one else would offer to do it ever. It was people's least favourite job, because I suppose it's the hardest work. Mm. So there we did. Mm. People didn't starve anyway.
And you did similar things at Akashavana
when it opened.
I think you supported Satyajotis.
I was on the retreat team for Satyajotis. I started off there being on the support team. They live over the hill and do all the shopping and mend things that go wrong and stuff like that. Drive around endlessly up and down with rather wonky tracks. It's a lovely job, though. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And then, so I did that the first year, and then on the back of that, they asked me to be on the retreat team for the following year, there's another doddle. It was a doddle compared to being on the support team. All you had to do was lead the odd meditation and talk to people and give the odd talk. I mean, it was lovely. I really enjoyed it.
So we're coming to your last track, actually, and coming to you moving to Sheffield.
Oh, shit. The next 5 minutes.
Yeah, which was, when was that,
2005? Yeah. Autumn 2005, yeah, so ages ago now. So I came to Sheffield because I didn't think I could work for, if you're live at Tiruchirappalli, you're working full time. And I thought, don't think I could do this for very much longer. And also, if I'm going to move, I want somewhere where I can put down some roots. You know, it's quite hard. The older you get, to feel that you can bed yourself in somewhere. So I decided to move to Sheffield. I knew Siapadar, that was about it. But I knew the countryside. Oh, I knew Vimala Matti. I think she was, she was still here. That's right, a bit. So, yeah. So, countryside, two people I knew.
What's not to like?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's, shall we hear your last track?
Yeah.
Okay. That's probably not all of it. But
probably not all of it, no.
Thank you. Wonderful. So that was the first movement of Beethoven's string quartet number 15 in A minor. And wasn't it?
Oh.
Oh. What was it then?
I thought it was 132.
Oh.
Never mind. Anyway, it was Beethoven. Choral, we can agree
132.
On that.
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's both.
Anyway. Yeah, I'm sure we're both right. Absolutely. Yeah.
That was performed by the Lindsay Quartet.
Yes, our Lindsay's. Yeah.
Sheffield Quartet. Mm. So do you want to say a bit about that track?
Yes. It was one of his last quartets. And there's something about it that's quite difficult to get hold of, but it feels like it's very much where I'm up to in my life. It's not so obviously melodic or, I don't know, there's something about it that's got layers that I can't get to, which I really appreciate. And, yeah. So, way back when I was wondering what the purpose of life was and what was important to me, something about that it's not easy to sum up, it's not easy to say, oh, now I've got it. But there's something very mysterious about it. Yeah. Maybe that's all I could say. And it reminds me, of course, playing quartets. Mm. That is one of the experiences of my lifetime. Playing with three other people. I mean, it's much better than sex. It's just totally engrossing. You're paying attention to these other three people and to what you're doing yourself and how it comes together and expresses something that on your own you couldn't do. Absolutely not. So, yeah. Mm. Thank you, Beethoven. Mm. And I'll take that one with me since you're about to ask me.
I was. So, I'm about to cast you away on your desert island.
Why did I ordain this woman?
You're going to have loads of time to reflect and reflect on the Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you the Dharmapada.
Thank you. Yes, I'd like that. I prefer a different translation, actually, but never mind.
Okay. That's fine. You can have whatever translation you like.
Okay, but one Dharmapada. Yeah.
And I'm going to give you Bhante's memoirs.
Great.
Which will keep you busy. And
for a bit, yeah.
And you've got a book of your own choice. What would you like to
have? I had fun choosing this. No, I didn't. I had excruciating time choosing this because I thought, I'll read those in a week. What am I going to do then?
In a week.
I do read rather frivolously fast. And I thought, there's lots of novels I'd like to take, but once you've read a novel, you've kind of read it, haven't you? I mean, you can read it again in another few years, but I don't know how long I'm going to be there. So anyway, so then I suggested, it didn't go down very well, I suggested an etymological dictionary because I'm really fascinated by, where do these words come from? How they've changed their meanings? Whatever. It gives you a whole new line on different words. We never know what we mean anyway with the words we use, but so I could have been happy with that. And then I thought, no, I don't think so. So poetry, because I don't know what poetry means and I can keep on being engaging with it. So I'm just going to read you one.
Oh, great.
Okay,
lovely.
So this is Jane Hirschfield. You gave it to me, Anna. You did. And the book's called Each Happiness Ringed by Lions, whatever that means. I just think she's an ace poet, and I'm just going to read you one. Because you know with poetry, you need it short, otherwise you can't take it in by somebody else reading it. So this is short. Tree. It is foolish to let a young redwood grow next to a house. Even in this one lifetime, you will have to choose. that great calm being, this clutter of soup pots and books. Already the first branch tips brush at the window. Softly, calmly, immensity taps at your life. Jane Hirschfield.
Great. That's great. And your luxury. What's your luxury going to be?
Luxury? I'm afraid it's another book. I'm a bit of a booky person, really. So, this was given to me by a Dharmacharini friend when I went off for ordination. No, when I came back from ordination. She'd made it. So I'm trying to show it to the cameras. I don't know what I'm doing. She's made this Tibetan-style book, all beautifully padded and everything. And it is all calligraphied with pressed flowers and goodness knows what, the Heart Sutra and the Ratnaguna Samchayagatha. And it's absolutely, well, you won't be able to see it, but it's absolutely gorgeous. So that's my luxury. I don't even need to read it, I just hold it. I think she did that. She must have taken her weeks and weeks and weeks.
That's lovely. And yeah. You've got some good Dharma there as well.
I've got the odd bit of Dharma that I don't understand, and it isn't made for understanding in that kind of way, is it? So, yeah, keep me quiet.
Yeah. And how do you think you're going to get on the desert island? Do you think you'll survive?
Well, as long as I need to, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not very fussy about what I eat. So I think I'll be, well, except I don't fancy eating fish particularly. I haven't eaten fish for about 50 years, something like that, so.
Well, maybe some bananas.
Oh, thanks. You can go a long way on bananas, can't
you? The odd coconut. You'll have to wait for them to fall.
And we'll have to wait for them to fall, definitely, yeah.
And you're going to be able to make a shelter and build a fire? And of course you will.
Yeah, eventually.
Okay. And you're going to save the Beethoven from the waves?
I'm going to save the Beethoven from the waves, yeah.
Wonderful.
Sit there and read Jane Hirschfield and the Heart Sutra, alternately. And Bhante, sorry, Bhante. Yeah.
It doesn't sound so bad, does it?
It's all right. I could recommend it.
Yeah. So, Shantacity, thank you so much.
Well,
it's
thank
been
you.
A great pleasure. Thank yeah. Thank you to the audience, and yeah, and thank you so much, Pranya Vidaya.
Yeah, thank you.
Being our techspert.
Thank you for asking me.